Please be seated. In our gospel today, Jesus gives us two lessons. Both are taught from the house of a Pharisee where Jesus is attending dinner. That alone is interesting. Who was this Pharisee, and why did he invite Jesus to dinner? Jesus was being watched carefully by those who would become his enemies. They were watching him at the dinner. They couldn't figure him out. So, during the dinner, Jesus watches how they act too, how they position themselves, how they were jockeying to be recognized. We live near Washington, D.C., and no doubt we have experience with this. We've all probably attended dinners, governmental, corporate, charitable, and we know this occurs. Even at the charitable fundraisers, there's a head table, and there's a pecking order about how people are seated and how tables are arranged. So Jesus sees this happening and decides to tell two stories, both about how to act at dinners. Our reading specifies that he talks of what our conduct should be at a wedding banquet. I thought this was curious, so I spent some time thinking about it this week. Why not a funeral or an everyday setting like a dinner that Jesus was at? A wedding dinner is a joyful occasion, a celebration of two people who are joining together and venturing into a new life in unity. One reason Jesus sets these lessons at a wedding banquet may be as a reminder of joy in celebrating people other than ourselves. He chooses a joyful setting to illustrate communion, to draw a picture of how people are to be with each other, know each other, reside with each other. When we go to a wedding, hopefully we are filled with happiness, our hearts full of expectation about the new future. In the first story, it seems like Jesus is giving directions for a social feint, a calculated placement of sitting at a lower place so that the host can move you to a better place. It reads, "But when you are invited, go and sit down at the lowest place, so that when your host comes, he may say to you, 'Friend, move up higher.' Then you will be honored in the presence of all who sit at the table with you." Curious. All the while, you are saying, hand to chest, "Who, me? You want me at the head table?" It seems to be about false positioning. But I don't think Jesus intended cunning. He intended sincerity. He is speaking about an inclination of heart, about making your heart so reduced from pride that it would be natural to sit at any seat and ideally not to even notice that there's a lower seat. His hope for us is that we would be so filled with joy for the new union that we would be happy, just be filled with joy. We'd sit down and look at those around our table and tell stories of how we knew the couple. We talk of our hopes for their happiness and a future filled with joy. If the host comes and moves us to another seat, well, that would be fine. We get to meet new folks around the new table and hear their stories, and we'd have a different perspective, a different vantage point of the wedding couple. Jesus' idea is that this new position of honor would not be sought, but granted. This does not mean that Jesus wants us to falsely humble ourselves or to seek the lowest place because we don't feel worthy of recognition. It does not mean that we should be so falsely humble that we are never recognized, or that we should not be examples of achievement, intellect, and agents of change. Once upon a time, I had the privilege of studying in Italy for a summer. As many of you know, the sidewalks in Florence, Italy, are narrow. It appeared to this tall and somewhat physically formidable American that there was only space on the sidewalk for one person at a time. When someone approached me as I was walking, I would step off the sidewalk into the gutter so that we would not run into each other. There would be smirks from the attendants. I mistook that for superiority. But as I spent more time in the city and watched the flow of pedestrian traffic, I noticed a subtle and elegant method of movement, almost a gesture, which was employed by the Italian people, accustomed to being together in small spaces. They stayed on the sidewalk, and when someone approached from the opposite direction, they gently turned their shoulders. Then two people could pass without either stepping into the gutter. This gesture allowed eyes to meet and faces to be revealed fully. It required a closeness and intimacy that I found unfamiliar. It was communal and respectable. It was a shared encounter. No one needed to be falsely humble by stepping into the gutter. It's pesky to quell pride, to seek humility. I think perfection of humility may only be achieved through love. This also means love of self. If you are able to love with abandon, it does not matter from which vantage point you are seated at the dinner. What matters is that you are at the dinner and that you are so filled with love and appreciation for yourself and for the other, so engaged in their story, that the darkness of self-consciousness fades because of the light of love you inhabit. Because of the love you show for your fellow guests, for the community gathered, and for the wedding couple, the room is filled with the light of Christ. Let's think of it this way. Here's an example from our own life at Holy Cross. Last week, we buried a beloved member of this community, Peyton Marshall. If we could have one more dinner with him, would we be consumed with sitting right next to him, or would we be fully content just to be in the room, to be together again? I never had the privilege of meeting Mr. Marshall, but from the stories that I have heard from many of you, I was eager to be in any room where he was present. Though a stranger to him, I am now included in the joy and achievement of his life through all of you, through our community, which is built on fellowship at the table of the Eucharist. In the second story, Jesus talks about our motivations for giving dinners. He talks about not expecting reciprocation for a dinner that you host. To prevent a quid pro quo, he suggests inviting the poor, the crippled, the lame, and the blind, those who are unable to pay you back. Again, he is speaking of generosity of spirit and inclination of heart. And he's saying, just do it. Have the dinner. Enjoy each other. Build community. Because our table does not need to be filled with crutches and walkers and white canes and tattered clothes, though it may, If we think about it, we know that each of us are at varying times and circumstances poor of spirit, crippled by anger, lame by inaction, and blind to privilege. When we are broken, we may never be able to directly repay the kindness of the host. We can never repay God, our host, for the grace extended to each of us. But we can pass it on to each other, and even to the stranger. We are all hungry souls. A carefully watched Jesus sets these lessons at a wedding banquet to remind us and the Pharisee that we're all hosts and participants in the wedding. His desire for us is a wedding of our hearts to his. Our Eucharistic table will be set shortly. Come to the wedding banquet wherever you are seated. Come with a heart which rejoices in each other and in Jesus, the bridegroom, and his bride, the church. And that, my friends, is all of us. Amen.